chapter 17. We'll read verses 14 through verses 21. When they would be Jesus, Peter, James, and John, were come to the multitude, there came to him, that is Jesus, a certain man kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is lunatic and sore vexed, for oftentimes he falleth into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to thy disciples, and they could not cure him. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him hither to me. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. Then came the disciples to Jesus apart and said, why could not we cast him out? And Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief. For verily I say unto you, if ye have faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. Howbeit this kind goeth not out but by prayer and fasting. Here we see Jesus healing a demonic lunatic. We see, by way of background, just prior to this, Jesus took Peter, James, and John into a mountain. Notice in Matthew 17, we'll read the first 8 verses. And after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart. And then we're told what happened on that mountain. He was transfigured. He was unveiled before them. That is, his glory was revealed. His face did shine or radiate as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. That is, his raiment also radiated. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elias talking with him, that is, talking with Jesus. Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here, or be good for us to stay here. If thou wilt, let us make here 3 tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elias. While he yet spake, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And behold, a voice out of the cloud, which said, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. And Jesus came and touched them and said, arise, be not afraid. And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no man save Jesus only. We see what happened on that mount. This is just prior to this miracle. And then we see Jesus, Peter, James, and John made their way down that mountain. And we are told what transpired as they are coming down the mountain. Verse 9. And as they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead. And his disciples asked him, saying, again, this is taking place as they're coming down the mountain, why then say the scribes that Elias must come first? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Elias truly shall first come and restore all things. But I say unto you that Elias is come already, referring to himself. And they knew him not, but have done unto him whatsoever they listed. Likewise shall also the Son of Man suffer of them. Then the disciples understood that he spake unto them of John the Baptist. And they were come to the multitude. So now they're down from the mountain. And they come to this multitude of people. So we have Jesus, Peter, James, and John. They've come down from the mountain. As they do, they see a multitude of people gathered. These people are questioning the other nine apostles. Notice in Mark's account, in Mark chapter 9, verse 14, and when he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude about them, and the scribes questioning with them. Verse 15, when this multitude saw Jesus come down from the mountain, and straightway all the people, when they beheld him, were greatly amazed, and running to him, saluteth him. Jesus then proceeded to ask the scribes why they were questioning the disciples. Verse 16, and he asked the scribes, what question ye with them? Now I believe before the scribes could answer that question, one of the individuals of that multitude was the father of a demon-possessed son. And he came and he knelt before Christ, and he told Jesus how he had brought his son to the apostles, so that the apostles would deliver his son from this demon. But they could not. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record in their account this man saying, and they could not. The apostles could not cast him out. Now notice here in Mark chapter 9, verse 17 and 18, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit, and wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and foameth, and gnasheth with his teeth, and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out, and they could not. And they could not. Luke chapter 9, verse 40. And I besought thy disciples to cast him out, and they could not. Again, they could not. We see the same thing in Matthew's account. We'll not turn there, but we see Matthew records the same thing. These apostles could not cast this demon out of this father's son. Jesus then proceeded to have the demonic brought to him, and we know what happens. He delivers the demonic from the demon. In doing so, he, of course, released the demonic from the oppression that the demon caused him. But also in doing so, he released the father from an overwhelming burden. And on top of all of that, he taught the apostles, because the apostles would later, after everything had transpired, when they were alone with Jesus, they would ask him, why could not we cast him out? You remember that Christ had given them the authority to cast out demons. So they had the authority to do so. But at this time, they could not. They were unable to cast the demon out. And then Jesus proceeded to teach the apostles a great lesson on faith. But first of all, let's consider this situation. It was a very desperate situation. It was a desperate situation for the Father. It was a desperate situation for the Son, who was demon-possessed. And as you read the accounts of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and again, what one leaves out, the other has something to say about it. So you, by looking at all three accounts, you get a pretty good picture of what is happening. And again, we would encourage you, anytime you're looking in the Gospels, look at all the accounts of the same event. It's not like they contradict one another. Again, as we've already said, it's what one person sees, another person may not see. What one person focuses on, another person may not focus on. It'd be just like if you and I witnessed the same thing. Some would focus on one thing, some would focus on another. Some might see one thing, some might not see one thing. And this is how it is with the Gospels. And therefore, it's always good to ask everybody. If someone sees an event, ask everybody. Get a pretty good idea. And that's what we have here. But first of all, the Father, no doubt, had an overwhelming burden. We see here in Matthew 17, in verse 15, again, he's part of this multitude. And he came to the Lord and he said, "Have mercy on my son. Have mercy on my son." Now, Luke adds some details. Notice in Luke chapter 9, verse 38. Luke adds one detail, and it's a very important detail. "And behold, a man of the company cried out, saying, 'Master, I beseech thee, look upon my son, for he is my only child.'" Perhaps Matthew didn't hear that. Perhaps Matthew just didn't focus on that. But Luke did. "For he is my only child." Now, to me, that shows a greater degree of burden. Lord, be merciful to my son. There's a burden there. There's a burden. But when you add, "Look upon my son," or "Be merciful to my son, for he is my only." He is my only child. Seems to me that there is a greater burden. There is great emotion in those words. "Have mercy on my son. Look upon my son, for he is my only child." This tells us much about the Father's condition at this time. He no doubt was desperate, went to the apostles. He was looking for a cure for his son. He no doubt was anxious, and he no doubt was very fearful. "He's my only son." In other words, "Lord, if you don't do something, I am going to lose him, and he's all that I have." So there's some anxiety here. There is fear. I believe in this Father's words, you can hear a tone of anguish and distress. He no doubt was a man who was in great turmoil at this time. Lord, have mercy on my son. And then as he goes on and describes the condition of his son, you can see that this father was greatly pained at his son's condition. He was grief-stricken over the condition of his son. And he's at the point of despair. When you get to the point of, Lord, have mercy, that's a point of despair. The truth is, we need to often be brought to that point. But that is a point of despair. That is a point where you realize that you can do nothing and that no one else can do anything. And it's also the realization that you're unworthy of anything. And the only thing that you can plead is the mercy of God. So this father was weighted down. This father was greatly burdened. He's a very, very troubled individual. He seems to be a very restless individual. No doubt he has great concern for his son, and no doubt he is greatly saddened for his son. So when Jesus healed this young man, he not only was gracious to the son, he not only was merciful to the son, he was also gracious and merciful to the father. He relieved the father of this tremendous burden that he was feeling. Again, the father goes on to tell Jesus how he had brought his son to the apostles, no doubt believing, no doubt hoping that they could deliver him. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke again all record, but they could not. And these are the words of the father. The father says they could not. I brought my son, my only son, my demon-possessed son, my suffering son. I brought him to your apostles, your followers. And I brought him to them that they would heal him, and they could not. In those words, they're is despondency. They could not. In those words, there is discouragement. They could not. In those words is great disappointment. I thought when I brought my son to them that certainly they would be able to do something. But they could not. So here is a man who is greatly disappointed as well. He's at his wit's end. And as you read on, you get a very accurate picture of the condition of this man's son. The condition was critical. The condition was seemingly hopeless. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record the description of this man's son. And it, of course, is the result of this demon. And as you look at all three accounts, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we have a pretty clear description of this one who was demon-possessed. First of all, notice in Mark chapter 9, the father is describing here the influence that this demon had upon his son. So he had witnessed this many times. Verse 18, and wheresoever he, that being the dumb spirit, the demon, wheresoever he taketh him, wheresoever he, the demon, taketh him. That word taketh shows that this man's son was under the control of the demon. The demon takes him wheresoever he wants. It's as if the son has no control whatsoever. Again, imagine the burden of seeing a child under the control of something that is destructive. Here, of course, it was a demon. It was as if the son had absolutely no control over his own life. Wheresoever he taketh him. So this son was in the absolute bondage and under the absolute control of a demon. Then notice in Matthew 17, verse 15, he says, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic." He's out of his mind. He's crazy. This is more than he doesn't think right. This is more than anyone who's raised teenagers and says, "What in the world were you thinking?" He's a lunatic. He's a lunatic. This, no doubt, is the result of the possession. It's the result of demon possession. Now, don't go from here and say, "Brother Dan believes everybody who's insane is demon possessed." That's not what I said. But I will say this. It's possible. It's possible. I do believe that some insanity is directly attributed to demon possession. People in our society don't think that way. But I truly believe that. That being said, I'm not saying everyone who has mental issues is demon possessed. That's not what I'm saying. This man was a lunatic. What that means is he was insane. He was a maniac. He was a madman. He was insane, and it was manifest in his life. He was a maniac and a madman. This man's son was out of his mind. Not only was he out of his mind, he was out of control. "Whithersoever the demon taketh him." He's completely under the control of this demon. Also notice in Matthew 17, verse 15, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is lunatic, and in addition to being insane, he is sore vexed." He is sore vexed. The word "sore" means painfully. He is painfully vexed. To be vexed is to be irritated, to be harassed. He is painfully irritated and harassed by this demon, to the point of exasperation. Perhaps it was the vexation, the irritation, constant irritation of a demon that led to the insanity. But he said he is painfully vexed. That means he is suffering. He is hurting. Not just physically, we'll get to that later. But he is mentally hurting. He is mentally being vexed and tormented by this demon. When he's awake during the day, this demon painfully torments him. If you are mentally tormented all day long, and that goes on for a period of time, eventually you will lose your mind. And that's what happened here. He was painfully tormented. Perhaps when he was sleeping, he would be awakened in the night. Tormented by this demon. Notice also, he was suicidal. Verse 15. Lord, have mercy on my son. For, because he is a lunatic, and he's sore vexed, he's painfully tormented. For, the reason I know this, he says, because oftentimes he falls into the fire, and oftentimes into the water. Not just that he falls into it, it's like he was cast by the demon. He's under control. Remember, the demon taketh him whithersoever he will. Taketh him to the fire. Taketh him to the water. This man was suicidal. This is a result of his lunacy. This is a result of the torment that he's under. So this father is saying, My son, he's out of his mind. He lives his life in torment. He lives his life in misery. And more than once, he cast himself, or he's been thrown into the fire. More than once, he's been thrown into the water. More than once, there have been attempts of suicide. So again, you can imagine the burden that this father feels for his son. And you can imagine the torment and the anguish that this son was going through, the torment of this individual's life. There are a lot of people today who live their lives tormented. That can be for a lot of reasons. It can be guilt. There are a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons, that some live lives of torment is demon possession. And I don't care how many doctors you go to, they won't fix demon possession. There's only one who can. And that's the Lord. And I do believe that that's part of our problem today, is nothing is attributed to demon possession. And I believe there is much in our society that can be, and that should be, attributed to demon possession. And like anything else, unless you get to the root of the problem, and if there's demon possession, believe me, that's the root of the problem. Nothing can be fixed. So this is, again, we've seen several miracles already where Christ has healed the demon possessed. And that's very real. That's very real today. Let's look to the Lord.